did you find this?
Hey, Shane.
What's up, Tony? What's up, Craig?
Yo, we got a skeleton crew again today. Ryan's on the short-term IL.
He's getting robot legs.
Yeah, they're upgrading.
He wants that 40 time at 4.4.
Yeah, get better soon, Ryan. Ryan's sick, so we're letting him, rest up this week. Took a week off.
He does enough for the podcast, right? I bail the most, so I can fill in.
He was caught up in a Rashi Rice traffic accident.
He had $180 worth of weed on him. Put him in federal prison.
Probably 180 ounces, man. Maybe 180 pounds.
You know what we should do if the court case doesn't happen or in like Rashi Rice is in limbo? We should have him on our 420 special.
That would be so sick. Well, like, you got to imagine, what do you think the number, like the percentages of NFL players who are active pot smokers?
95%.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like, I'm sure all of them would be down.
Not Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
Mac Jones probably. He said he's a rapper, so Mac Jones.
Kirk Cousins, though, I feel like Kirk Cousins gets secondhand high.
Oh, he hangs out. He doesn't like it, but he definitely, like, hangs out.
They blow it in his face like he's a dog. All right. Well, I got a guy this week, so let's hit it. Let's party.
Let's do it.
So I got to be honest, man, like I've been hitting kind of like a writer's block when it comes to the segments every week.
It's hard, especially in the off season, right? Like the fuck do we talk about?
Right. So I've been reaching out to other sports or talking about the socio-political implications of football. So today I actually decided to dig deep back into the catacombs of history and highlight some of the earliest variations of the game that has come to be known as football.
Right on.
All right, so we know American football is essentially a hybrid game that developed out of soccer and rugby, and different parts of the world would end up establishing what we call codes that are essentially rules or procedures that dictate what makes the game what it is. Most football codes today are different across countries and cultures, from America to Canada to Ireland to Australia. Some are more soccer, some are more rugby, some are more American football. The game we know, like I said, is a hybrid, and while it was developed in America, it has origins in a type of foot/ball/goal game that's been played all over the world, including in North America, first by indigenous cultures. There's a pretty clear inflection point where we can point and say, like, all right, this is most likely the origin of the game that will eventually go on to become the one where Justin Fields will save the national psyche. So... But to get there, let's do a little digging. So the object of a ball, or the idea of a ball or object being advanced into a goal, has roots in prehistory, where the prevailing theory is that it also has roots in fertility rituals, which fucks. I wrote hold for applause here. everywhere from the Far East to Europe to the Middle East to the pre-Columbian Americas had some form of this game at some point in its history. However, the transition from that to the game that we gamble on every year takes a big step forward in the European Middle Ages. So this is my long-winded way of talking about us focusing on something called mob football. Shrovetide is a celebration that takes place before Lent, and I don't know any of this shit because I'm fucking Jewish. And it was this time of the year when Londoners and other various Limeys would get together and play this like hybrid game. And it's fucking insane. So the rules change depend on where you go, but the European version goes as such. You either have town versus town or two separate parts of a town against each other. The goal is to take a ball, which back in the Middle Ages was an inflated pig's bladder, to a checkpoint on the other team's city or side of town, or a predetermined location decided before the match. You can throw, kick, or carry this ball, and the other team and yours can do whatever it takes to get it there.
A gun.
Well, okay, so the only rules are no murder and no manslaughter. That's it. That is the only rules to the game.
So you can point a gun at somebody, you just can't pull a trigger.
You can most certainly threaten people with a gun. So that's the object. Don't kill anyone, and then after that, everything goes. The earliest written evidence of this game or versions of it on Shrove Tuesday are in the fucking 1100s. And... you got a ball tossed up like a jump ball to start, and a giant mass of people and arms and bodies are moving in whatever direction in a colossal scrum that's hundreds of people deep and long.
I think we got to go back to that. I think society's too complex. This just sounds like how we should be living.
Let's just run in a big mob at each other. So players get maimed, beaten, punched, whatever. Towns that had mob ball games would board up their windows and shops during this period because of the extreme damage it would cause. Rules evolved to where you couldn't go through a cemetery, memorial park, or highway. But other than that, free fucking rain, baby. Rivers, residential neighborhoods, you name it. Teams also don't have to be set in stone. So you could have just been like sitting around at home and then be like, you know what? I'm going out there, baby. Okay, so I'm going to butcher this pronunciation. So Pasukakawahog is the pre-Columbian American version of this game, and it's pretty much exactly the same. It's like war. Players would paint their faces or wear disguises to obscure their identities so they wouldn't get in any trouble for what they did during the game, which is that's pretty cool. Most of these games range from about 500 to 1,000 players a game.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so it's disputed, but some believe in the indigenous American version of it, there was like a big celebratory feast between the two teams afterwards.
How many people do you think like died, right? Like, this is not like, granted, you could do whatever and you can't kill anybody, but like you break a leg in 900 AD, it ain't good.
Yeah, your odds of surviving that is not great. However, I gotta tell you, I got good news. There are still a handful of places in Europe that play mob football. The Royal Shrovetide football match happens in February in every year. I watched last year's on YouTube, and it's fucking insane.
Is it in like Belarus?
No, it's in like some small town in London.
Oh, okay.
Or outside of London. So you can watch it on YouTube. It's like one town and they're called like a river splits the town, and it's the uppers versus the downers. And I want to buy a shirt so bad. And if FanDuel allows it, I'll be betting heavily on the downers next year. There's also, I don't know if you watched, did you watch the Netflix show about like weird sports from around the world?
No, I'm a broke boy who doesn't pay for Netflix.
Okay. I'll hook you up. Cause they did an episode on kind of, there's like an Italian version of it in, it's called Calcio Fiorentino. And that's like in a square, and it's more like, I describe it as roller derby mixed with MMA and soccer.
That sounds really sick. I do watch stuff though. It's on F movies, so don't kill the messenger. But
for sure, I mean, look, when Netflix starts advertising, then we'll start talking.
Yeah. Dude wipes, next segment.
So that's mob football. And then next week, we're going to talk about the next step up into the game's evolution, something called the Boston game.
Ooh, chronological. I love it.
Yeah, dude, the mob football. I watched the YouTube video. At first, I'm like, what's happening? By the end, I was like, what's happening? This rules.
See, that's how you find good content. This probably like ages me and like maybe our generational gap. Have you ever seen the movie The Road to El Dorado?
I have.
Okay, it's not a Disney movie, but I think it's a Disney movie, but when you brought up the segment, it reminded me of like the hip ball thing, and I think that's like a really cool primal American, not American, primal humanity, right? Of like, hey, the winner gets to fuck.
Yeah. Yep.
If you lose, you get sent to the cave.
Sorry, bro.
Try again next year.
Sorry, you're under arrest for driving with weed in your car.
Loser!
But yeah, this game, dude, is fucking awesome. I saw this old crotchety British man, and he's like, if my son told me he's a woman or he's gay, I would tell him I love him to death. But if he told me he was playing for the other team, I would disown him. I would never talk to him again.
Do you think like the Hatfield and McCoys, if they had this game, they wouldn't have the issues they had, right? Like you can just like every 6 months just have the town bullshit get washed away in this singular event.
There's a place like that in the Andes. I think Vice did a documentary on it a few years ago where everyone in this town right around Christmas goes to the town square and they like take turns beating the shit out of each other.
I think that'd be sick, dude. Like I like think how much bullshit on Nextdoor wouldn't exist if you just like got this every 3 months of like your dog got out. It's like, all right, Karen, meet me in the fucking pit tomorrow.
Let's go.
Put your face paint on. Let's go. How bad do you want this?
Well, apparently this community that does this fighting is like so small that there's no cops and there's no way really for the outside world to get to it easily.
They self-regulate. That's sick.
They just wail on each other once a year, and it was awesome. I loved watching it. It was cool as hell.
I did find out today that in Anaheim, the city that I live in, I just doxed myself. If you get put onto Angel Security, you are demoted from the police, because I saw an old cop who came to my work one time and I saw her working security for like the police security outside, and I was like, you lost your gun, you fucked up.
Excessive use of force. All right, speaking of excessive use of force, Shane, what do you got?
I got a force of words here. So someone brought up in the Discord this week of a lottery system for picks, which I was like, okay, I kind of like it, but also like if my team sucks ass and I'm like guaranteed 101 with no quarterbacks, like my quarterback is like Jameis Winston and that's like the only thing, and I'm in this lottery and I lose and I get kicked to 103, I'd be pretty fucking mad. So I was like, you know what? I like to be enraged all the time. So like, how do I make this event even more frustrating? We do a chaos fantasy or chaos dynasty, right? So
okay.
They say people who have the most inventive ideas gets killed first. So I'm going to get killed for this idea. But the way the dynasty works out is like 12 people, 10 people, however you want to work it out. But the draft is all random. So you all agree upon like a website's ADP of like, hey, we all can agree that picks 1 through picks 14 are all within this tier. And we put it into a random number generator, and each person goes pick by pick. So even though you may be going first, you can end up with like Trevor Lawrence, Justin Jefferson, whatever. And it goes down the whole line, and we basically expand the draft pool every time. So like the first 10 picks are the first 12 players, then so on and so forth. You add like a row. So like the tiers get wider because people do play within things.
Sure.
And then draft picks at the end of the year, also just random. Everybody gets 12 pick, or everybody gets their first rounder, whatever, however you want to use it. If you want to sell players to accumulate more lottery chances in a class, to defeat the purpose of hubris of people who will not trade their picks because they want to do their research, Waleed.
got him.
I don't know. I just thought it would be like a really, like a, even like a best ball format of just doing the most like chaotic shit possible of like, hey, you can do all your homework, but at the end of the day, that button is going to sign what you get.
See, okay. That's max chaos. That's absolute max chaos. My radical centrist take on this is I would be down if it was a regular draft and a lottery for rookie picks, because like, I think you would end up having less teams that just strip to the bare bones to get 101, 201. And so, like, I think you'd end up with more competitive rosters because everyone's aiming for bottom three or bottom four, depending on how the, you know, the odds work out for the drawing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all about it, man. I love the chaos. The chaotic dynasty startup is insane, and it's hard. It would be hard for me to invest money in it, but I love chaos.
I would do it for free, right? I would be like, yeah, hey, we're just playing this game for free. Like, I don't know, how pissed would you be? Like, sick, I have my first three rounds and I have like Trevor Lawrence. Let's just look at an ADP board right now. Because someone's getting screwed, right? Like,
yeah.
And someone's going to have like a busted ass team.
Yeah. And so, then you know what? I'll just quit the league for my mental health the next year. Yeah,
exactly. So like someone could end up with like AJ Brown, Christian McCaffrey, and like Breece Hall, and that's it, right? That's their first three picks of the draft. And I mean, I think it'd be interesting too to see how people like would have to work together to basically make accumulations of teams, right? Of like some dude has all the quarterbacks, some dude has all the wide receivers, right? Like how do people trade, and like how does the market value those kind of things? Because you can't just look at like keep trade cut or like a random startup value, because someone holds all the pieces, right? And like you can't play like a super flex format without any quarterback. So like,
right,
you'd have to wheel and deal, and like ultimately it'd be like luck would have to be in your favor. But I mean, just right, looking at ADP boards now is like there's 9 quarterbacks in the first, or there's what, yeah, there's 9 quarterbacks in the first 12 picks. So like you're basically guaranteed to get one quarterback, right? It might not be the sure guy that you want, but the way it pans out.
Right.
I don't know. It was just something where I was like bored at work, and I'm like, dude, how fucking sick would this be? We did golf league last year, and we should do chaos draft this year.
Dude, golf league was so fucking fun. I can't wait to do it again.
We're running it back, and I'm not changing defenses. If your defense scores 0, you get 20 points. Fuck you.
As you should, dude. Suck it. Like, that's just how it works. All right. So I'm in for the chaos. Real quick before we hop into our prospects, Darren Waller. Still in football. Still thinking about it.
Ah, man.
Still in football.
Like, what do you gain, right? I guess, like, he's already made the post. Oh, no, he has to make it to June, right? Because if he makes it to June, then he gets paid.
Right.
Oh, that's smart, dude. Just quiet quitting.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk prospects. We got a five pack today. Let's just start with Jalen Bussey, because I don't have like anything on him.
I don't either. He didn't have a lot of tape. He wasn't even in like anybody's ADP list. I'm like, this is how I know Tony's a real sicko.
Yeah, I wrote down like he has no production. It looked like I could see like highlights of him. It looks like he's got some juice. I could see him getting a kick return role at the next level. He's probably going to go undrafted and might kill it in the UFL. Maybe Canada.
Yeah, I wrote from the NDSU transfer film. Boy, does he hit that hole hard. Long speed, lateral cut without losing speed, small for the position, runs through people. Arm flailing is really weird to watch.
Yep.
Not a smooth runner. This is high school level defense. And then for Eastern Washington, dancing at the line is going to get him killed in the NFL.
Yeah, he's put him in at special teams, and that's it.
Next.
I also don't have a ton on McAllen Castle's tight end.
I said blocker. No, thank you.
Yeah, I said he needs a lot of work to become a starting caliber tight end.
He looks lost, right? Like, there's so many plays where he's like such a willing blocker, but the play develops outside of his cone of view, and he just looks like he's turned around looking for what happened to the ball. Like, he needs like the GPS shit in his helmet.
Dude, he had the worst open field blocking I've ever seen in my life. They had him block on a screen or a toss or anything on the outside. He got beat every single time.
Have you ever, I'm sure you've seen this video. It's like 20 years old, but have you ever seen the video with the blind kid playing football in high school?
And it's yes.
Like, what the fuck is going on? And the guy just like runs like cat. Like that's what this guy looked like.
Yeah. He is terrible. I think that like, if you put him, he could be like a fullback maybe. So he could be a Charger.
Come on. I know we talked about this off air, but come on, man.
I comped him to optimistic, like best case scenario, Noah Gray.
I didn't even put one in. All right. I know Ryan's here or Ryan's not here today, but can we just like talk about Brock Bowers? Like we could talk for him for 2 weeks. I don't give a shit, right? Like can we just like stop scouting tight ends except for Brock Bowers? Because I'm just so burnt out at the position.
He's Brock Bowers. I'm gonna save a lot of it, but I'm just gonna say right now. He's perfect.
Damn, dude.
He's fucking perfect. I think we're done with tight ends.
I think so, too. I mean, this class is like how you would say not good.
Yes. Okay, let's save the guy that broke your brain for last. I pushed really hard to add this guy to our list, so I want to know what your thoughts are on Jalen Wright. Running back.
I watched a lot of him. I mean, like the easy comp that I saw was like budget Kenneth Walker.
Okay.
I said nothing special, but explosiveness will lead to something crazy at a point. Not a guy I really want to spend a high second on, but like a flyer with like a late second, high third or fourth. If he hits fab, I definitely will put money on him. He provides an asset that could be a 1B. He loves the spin move. He's got contact balance. He does run upright. He's elusive in space, falls forward. His vision's okay. I know sometimes he had really good vision and sometimes I'm just like, yo, you missed that hole. He bounces outside frequently. He does take some time to get moving at speed. He gets a little cute at the line. But yeah, man, I didn't like hate him. I had him at a 79, which is like kind of in that top six, top seven kind of tier, right? Of like, I liked him, but I'm just like, I just want to see where he lands.
I'm going to tell you right now, I have him as my RB2.
Damn, dude. Is he Abaconda?
We always talk about like, hey, you can't really grade out Tennessee wide receivers Correct. Or quarterbacks well because of their scheme. And I see a guy that I think can translate really well to an NFL system because we don't know what he sees. And at the same time, I think that he's got good north-south. He can also, what he does best is he hits the hole quick and he makes that second move really fast.
And I think what sucks, right, is like one of the knocks on him was like he couldn't beat out Roshan and wait, is he from Tennessee?
That's Texas.
Oh, from Tennessee. Yeah, sorry, Texas. My bad. Who else was on Tennessee? Who was on Tennessee
that
last
was
year?
You're thinking of Jonathan Brooks.
Yeah, so everyone's like, you can't beat out Jonathan Brooks. I'm like, hey, dude, sometimes you're just the number two, right? It doesn't matter like why you're that reason at that spot. I'm not the fucking head coach, right? Sometimes talent does get buried. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, he has a really good ROS. His production's good enough for me, right? Like
25% of his rushes in 2023 went for more than 10 yards.
That's pretty gnarly. Again, it's all draft capital. You know what I mean? And like, even then, like if you believe in the talent, like someone like a Pacheco, right? If like not everybody was super high on him, but he went to a good offense that was open for him, he could end up in like Cincinnati. He could end up in Minnesota, even though they don't run the ball that much right now. But like, there's plenty of opportunities out there where he can take a position. I think he's worth it, a draft pick.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get him in the second where I can. I think he's going to creep up draft boards because I think he might be a third round pick somewhere.
That sounds about right. I mean, this class is so weird where like, I think it's going to be artificial, right? Like the rising of running backs is artificial because people are going to be like, well, I need a running back and I'm going to do the stupid thing as opposed to just like trading my pick for like an established player. But yeah, I don't know, man. We say this every year, but this year feels really weird for even with the NFL draft, because I feel like so many of these people are so within. Okay, so like he's your RB2, but is he your RB2 by like a substantial amount, or is he kind of in like a cluster?
He has the same tape score as Jonathan Brooks.
Okay.
And then they're only like 1 point above Marshawn Lloyd and two above Braylon Allen. So it's okay. All pretty clumped together. Yeah. And if I put them all together with like where my receivers are at, that's still, even the highest running back is still below AD Mitchell, still below my low key guy, Roman Wilson, still below and right at around Keon Coleman, Troy Franklin.
So they're like 205 or later, basically.
Yeah, more or less.
202 to 205 kind of area.
Yeah. And like once we hit, you know, the draft, it's going to change everything, right? Like, what if fucking Dylan Johnson gets crazy draft capital? You know what I mean? People will talk themselves into that.
It's tricky, right? Because, like, look at someone like Luke Schoonmaker. Who was the dude that went to Jacksonville? Was that Luke Schoonmaker?
Or
was that
Brenton Strange, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, cool. I'll get him in the fourth. Let's see what happens. Second round draft capital. Didn't do shit, right?
Like, yeah. Who knows? You hold him and you wait and see. Evan Ingram, you know, gets hurt. Who knows? We watched Parker Washington look okay after Christian Kirk went down.
That's true. But it is Christian Kirk season yet again.
Oh, dude. Yeah, I know. I just bought him today for 201.
That's not bad, man. I think like for, especially within that cluster of people, like who do you want, Keon Coleman or Christian Kirk?
Right. Well, it's in our league where, you know, you're starting three receivers and three flexes.
Oh yeah, so you need hammers.
Yeah, and like I'll take that over the dart throw at 201, because with the way that league is set up, because it's best ball, but you start six. Like I don't want to be starting Troy Franklin in his first weeks in the NFL if I have to.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So, that was my. It was my little segue into Christian Kirk love. Jalen Polk, you are less high on Jalen Polk than me, so I'm going to go first, and then I'm going to let you tear me down here.
Yeah.
I think he has a great catch radius. He works back to the quarterback. He can win at all three levels. Definite dog. Like you can see it. He's a dog. He lacks top-end physical traits. His hands are kind of iffy. I think he's a good red zone guy. I think he's a good route runner, and I think he wins at the point of the catch. But he's not a burner. He's not a good yards after catch guy, and he's not like the crispest route runner. He's elite in his ability to accelerate and then decelerate, but he's an NFL wide receiver too. He could have a decent floor depending on landing spot, but it's doubtful he will ever be a year-over-year wide receiver one producer. Real teams in the NFL will need guys like Jalen Polk, but I don't think he's someone that you're going to be comfortably starting in fantasy. I compared him to Marty Booker, former Bear.
Yeah, I honestly agree with you on all those things. I mean, like, I always sound more negative than I actually am on people. Like, I agree with everything that you said. The only issue that I had is mainly, like, he drops a lot. Like, it's concentration issues, and his yak ability is not good. I mean, obviously, like, that can expand as, like, they learn to develop in the NFL, but, like, from what I've seen, he wasn't really, not that he's like not motivated, but I saw so many times where he could have gone the extra 2 yards or like whatever. But like there was one play where he did like a comeback route and like he just like came back and just went out of bounds. I'm like, yo, just like go parallel to where you are and go outside. Like you right. lost a yard from where you were. So it's just weird things like that. I know. I definitely don't look, this is like a process thing of like, I definitely don't look for the same thing in every player. Like I kind of just watch as I'm seeing and just going based on vibes. Like when Ryan sure. mentioned last week of like footwork, like I don't look for that kind of stuff. I just like look at each play and be like, is this good or bad? Why is this good or bad? You know what I mean? That's kind of how I assess things play to play. I mean, obviously like some clips aren't too long. It's like 3 minutes for some guys, but yeah, I mean, I thought he was fine. I said, I don't really know. I see flashes, but I also don't see the ceiling. Kind of like how you were saying of like wide receiver two, of he's just going to be really difficult to produce or kind of pick in fantasy.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be a dude who's probably going to be overdrafted due to situation. Just because he's going to land in a spot that seems good on paper, but then his actual production ability is not going to like pan out.
Sure.
I feel like he's going to be like a Mac Hollins type, right? Of like, yeah, there's moments, but not really consistency.
Sure. I think that he might be another one of those guys that just hits a great landing spot. You know, I mean, what if he goes to Baltimore in the fourth?
They need somebody.
Yeah. In the third, whatever. Or if he goes in the third, he's...
Or he's a Patriot. They got to yeah. draft somebody, right?
Yeah. And why limit yourself to one KJ Osborne when you could have two? So I liked him. I think I watched Jalen McMillan, the slot from Washington, and like, man, he's real good too. So
he's
like,
he's a Walker sleeper, right? He mentioned that.
Yeah.
He liked him. Okay.
He's going to be the thing about McMillan is that McMillan got hurt last year. He started the year with like 3 great games and got hurt. And came back for like the Natty and like the Big 12 championship or in the semifinals. So like he didn't get to put together that last season that would have really solidified him.
So you're saying he's getting Justin Jeffersoned?
Yes. He is exactly Justin Jefferson, a 1-to-1 comp.
Gotcha.
I mean he was fun, man. We'll talk more about him when he comes up, but like I said that Jalen McMillan is everything that white people want Ladd McConkey to be. Like, still, I'm not into it. Dude, the more receivers I watch right here, the more I think anyone that's like, Ladd McConkey's my wide receiver 4. I'm like, are you insane?
Like, I think he's good enough, but like, you have to look at his production, right? Like, this was somebody, I don't remember who I was watching, but I said this in my notes. I'm tired of fucking screen passes. Take that shit out of the game. As soon as I see you do more than one screen pass in a fucking clip, I don't care. There's no production value for me there. I don't give a fuck. It's 1 point in PPR, whatever.
So does that mean you're ready to talk Xavier Leggett?
Yeah.
So he broke your brain, so let's go.
I think it came down to I watched him. I thought he was fine, but I came down to a question on how I keep the same energy, because as a person, I like to keep the same energy across the board with everything that I do, right?
Sure. Like,
you want to talk about it, be about it. And I was walking to work the other day, and I was like, dude, I like CJ Stroud, but then I watched the Georgia game, and I'm like, okay, he's him, right? So like, why does one game for a quarterback, which is the hardest position in the NFL and fantasy to nail, solidify my position on a player, but 1 year of production on a wide receiver kind of scares me, right?
Sure, sure.
So, like, it's this weird dichotomy of, like, Leggett came out of nowhere. Like, literally yep. did nothing for 4 years, and then he puts up, like, a 1,200-yard season?
Uh-huh.
So it's, like, it's this weird duality of, like, is this a fluke? Is he like finally reached his potential and he like skipped his Nico Collins thing of like, I'm going to be okay for 2 years and then I'm just going to ascend 1 year.
Right. Right.
Cause he's a 5th year senior. So it's like, it was just very, very perplexing in regards to like how you look at the process and assess players, as well as like me trying to figure out how I want to go forward looking at my entire ranking system as opposed to just like tape score and draft capital, like combining other people of like JJ Zacharyson's model, other people's analytics, like separation things, because like there's components that we are missing, right? There's players we have missed out on, and there's also dudes who have been landmines that we've stepped on. So it's like that, again, what I'm starting to learn is I don't want a big slot guy, and I don't want a fucking a screen pass. As that's like my base notes, but like I see DK Metcalf comps with this guy, and I'm like, ah, dude, I don't know.
No, if he was DK Metcalf, he would be dominating dudes.
Yeah.
And okay, so I got a spiel on Xavier Leggett, so I'm going to run through it really quick, and I want to know your thoughts.
Talk your shit.
Earliest comps I saw of him put the Debo tag on him, which is usually a death sentence in my book. The amount of guys who can do what Debo does is limited to one. I don't know if you noticed that. And I think when people get Debo comps to prospects, it just become a catch-all term for a guy who can't separate but is really good after the catch.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing because I wrote multiple times, he beats defenders with speed, not technique. Yeah.
Sure. And so actually, like with the Debo comps, I went in kind of pessimistic, but I still thought Leggett was better than expected. He didn't do anything, like you said, for 3 years, but then in that last year, he just dominated
with Spencer Rattler.
right. And he's got good, but not great hands. He's long speed and yards after catch skills are going to make him, could make him a focal point of a smart team's passing game. And like, bro, he's a good run blocker.
He's big. He's actually a dude who plays like to his size, right? Like the dude's like 6'3", like 220. Like he actually plays. But we talked about this before, but there's so many people in this class who don't play up to size. And he's one of those dudes where he plays up to size.
You know what I love too is, since he was totally raw as a recruit, I think he was late to the game. So first couple of years, he spent a lot of time on special teams as a returner, kickoff return, kickoff coverage, because you get an athlete this good, like you want to get him on the field. And even in his breakout season last year, he was the gunner on the punt team, which I thought was kind of cool. And I thought that sort of style and that role embodied who he was as an offensive player, despite the fact that he kind of sucked as a gunner. So I'm just going to say that and be real with you.
It's not for everybody, right? Look at Cordell Patterson, right?
Right, right. So I think he's still far from a finished product, and this might hurt his ceiling when you consider his age and his late declare / late breakout numbers. He's raw, and the more technical aspects of the wide receiver position sure looked like they made sense to him by his last year, but his success will be determined by how quickly he adjusts to what else is expected of him at the next level. I wrote, his floor looks a lot like Jonathan Mingo's rookie year. His ceiling looks similar to he who will not be named. Samuel.
Oh, okay. I was like,
I think that's an incredibly wide range of outcomes, which is scary. Like you were talking about JJ Zacharyson. He harps on range of outcomes. And if you're risk averse, Xavier Leggett is not your guy.
Yeah. And I think honestly, it comes down to like where he ends up in drafts, right? Because like currently in sleeper mocks, cause I mock every day, cause I'm a true fucking psychopath.
My man.
He's like end of the third, right? Or not end of the third, he's end of second. So he's like 211, 301, right? And at that point, who gives a shit, right?
Yeah.
You've already passed like tiers 1 through 6, in my opinion. So just like, hey, here's a dude who has a freak ceiling. Why not, right? I'm not doing the Jonathan Mingo thing at 202 and being like, whoops.
I think the worst possible outcome for dynasty draft sake, not him, and this is great for him, but I think the worst possible outcome is him getting like second round draft cap.
Yeah, and he's going to fly up boards.
And because then we're going to fucking hear the great Xavier Leggett like back and forth for like 3 months. And I don't want to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we have like when do your drafts take place? Do they take kind of place at the same time or do you have like big clusters like I do?
Most of them are first weekend of May.
That's when you should do it. Just get it done. That way you can just be like, I picked my guy. There's no talking heads. See ya.
Yeah. Yeah. So the last thing I wrote was like his range of outcomes plus his age means I think he's got some sort of depreciated value right now for how good his talent is. I think he's a top 10 wide receiver in this class. And I think if the cost sinks enough, he could end up being a steal. I have him, his player comp, as really good LaVisca Chenault.
I put DJ Chark, so that's kind of funny.
Yeah, I have his tape score exactly the same as Troy Franklin.
I can see that, you know what I mean? Like, you fall in love with the prospect in the beginning because they're like the third dude you watch. You're like, I love this player. And then like the more I look at it, I'm like, hey, Troy Franklin, I love you, bro. But like, you're just kind of sliding down my ladder here.
Yeah, you're really skinny.
Like I already had JMO. Sorry.
Right. So I think, dude, if I get Xavier Legette at 210, I'm happy.
It, like, what are you doing with that, right? Like, I'm trying to trade up, right? I've sent a couple offers this week to get out of the 110 and like 210 of just trying to move up, tier up, and just like get into a better thing because, like, what the fuck is that tier? Like, whatever is that tier? You know what I mean? Like,
cool. I'm thinking that tier ends up looking like Trey Benson, Bo Nix, you know, like, and it doesn't do anything for me. AD Mitchell.
No, AD Mitchell's going first round, dude.
I'm talking like 110.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Dude, if you're taking Bo Nix at 110, play a different game.
I mean, bro, if he goes, what if he goes to Denver in the first round?
This is Will Levis again, but like way worse, right?
Like, but I mean, process play, you have to take the quarterback. That's why I have so much Will Levis, because I had so much, you know, 109 last year.
Yeah, I think that comes down to like preference, right? Where like, I think if I don't like a guy enough, if nobody will trade out, I just take who I like, right? As opposed to I don't know, man. Like, we've seen so many quarterbacks bust in the last 2 years, right? Or three years, where burning the pick unless you can flip it immediately, because it's like, all right, so say he goes 12 to the Broncos, you take him at 110. Can you sell him at all? I don't think you can, for like less than 205, right? It's the same thing Hunter said. If anything after like 109 is like automatically a second value in trade.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. I take and hold, you know, like if an NFL team sees that, I'm going to take that risk, because at the same time, who do I lose out on? Keon Coleman?
Jahan Dotson.
Right, exactly. Like,
Quentin Johnston.
I have so much. Yeah, like, best case scenario, worst case scenario, you pass on George Pickens.
Yeah, who I've been trying to sell for fucking 2 years for first and never get anything.
Right. It's like the dynasty nesting doll theory, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tricky, man. Like, it's one of those things where, like, even Will Levis, I'm just like, can someone take this person off my roster, please? Like, I literally blasted out today. I was like, it's a 10-team, like, it's a league we playing together. I blasted out Jaden Reed, Will Levis, and 110. Initially, I sent it for Justin Jefferson. I was like, let's see how spicy we get. And if they reject it, whatever. But I would like their 102 for that spot, right? Like, I would take Neighbors or Marvin Harrison just because our benches are shorter and I want the hammer.
Yeah.
And this manager kind of needs depth, and I have enough quarterbacks where, like, I think it also comes down to me of when you can pivot off of a player, right? So like today someone traded Garrett Wilson away, right?
Yeah.
Where he's such a polarizing player, and I'm so on the opposite side of being excited, right? Of, I don't know if it's like me being new to the Jets and being like, they're just doomed for failure no matter what happens. But he has two outcomes, right? He can do what he did consistently the last 2 years with Aaron Rodgers and he gets his stock risen, or something happens and then his value absolutely plummets because he hasn't been a fantasy producer for 3 years, right? So
sure.
I definitely like to be a year ahead, right? I've stepped on more landmines than I have let people go who increase in value, right? So I kind of trust my instincts in that regard, but there's very much an argument of like, when is the time to move off of people? Like, every Kenny Pickett share I had of like, all right, he was fine year one and people need quarterbacks, so please take this shit, right? Turns out he's nothing. You know what I mean?
I would really like to move off of Drake London.
Yeah. But like, what do you get for him? Like, who's trading like a raw pick, like 105?
If I can get 105 or 106 for Drake London, I'm fucking in.
Because again, he's one of those guys where I'm like, I see it, but I'm also like, hey, this value can hit the fucking floor really fast.
And like, sure, man, I get it. Kirk Cousins, like, great quarterback. But there's no guarantee that these two are just going to instantly make sense.
Yeah, and I don't know, 30, what, 6-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles, brand new offense, brand new system. Like, it's not even like he's just going to Arthur Smith, right? They have an entirely new offense to learn together, right? I mean, maybe that's a good thing, right? They can all start from zero and start up, but we talked about this in Discord again. I think Kirk Cousins is going to be super overdrafted. I think that entire offense is going to be super overdrafted, and depending on price, I probably will have none of those shares.
Yeah, I mean, I can see myself being in on Bijan, but Kyle Pitts is going to be drafted tight end three this year, dude. I'm telling you right now.
He's never going to go away. Like the amount of cope, right? And I think that's the thing too with Brock Bowers is like he's a guy where if I'm at like 110 and I'm like facing down ADP boards of fucking Bo Nix, I think I just give up what I need to get Brock Bowers, even in like a non-tight end premium single tight end league, because like his value seems like it'll retain more since this dude has been the Bijan of tight ends since I've been playing fantasy football. You know what I mean? So like
Sure.
you have that asset that still maintains value compared to like a quarterback who does game manager shit. Everyone's like, cool, I'll give you a Baker Mayfield second for him. You know what I mean? So it's like,
Sure.
I think it's an avenue of points to output of, it's a whole convoluted thing. And at the end of the day, you press the button. So let it rip on how you believe. And we're just here to talk bullshit and hopefully guide you if you don't want to watch tape.
Bo Nix 110, book it. No, I'm kidding. Fuck
Oh,
that.
fuck, dude. I mean, it
All
would be
right.
cool to like watch him lose 2 times a year, but he better throw to fucking Marvin Mims.
Oh yeah, dude. I mean, he should know better. All right, so Ryan, this one's for you, buddy.
An honor.
I decided to fill in for Ryan today for the geography segment. So I decided to go to a place with no sister cities and no famous people. I'm going to talk about a town that only existed for one day, for one event, with both fatal and hilarious results. So, geography today, in honor of Ryan, is going to be about Crush, Texas, the site of the famous Crash at Crush. Do you know the Crash at Crush, Shane?
This is escaping me.
Hell yeah, strap in, baby. I didn't have a ton of time to put this together today. It was kind of last minute, so I apologize that a lot of this is just lifted off Wikipedia. And from what I remember from when I used to teach history, I would do like every Friday, I'd do like a fun human interest story. And so this was always one of them. All right, so the Crash at Crush was a one-day publicity stunt in Texas that took place in September of 1896, where two uncrewed locomotives crashed into each other head-on at high speed. William Crush was an agent of the Missouri, Kansas, Texas Railroad, and he came up with the idea to do a staged train wreck as a public skeptical a spectacle. They didn't charge admission, but train fares to the crash site, which was a place called Crush, and set up as a temporary destination for the event, they would sell these tickets for like $350 in 1896 dollars, which is equivalent of like $125 today.
Is this why we don't have like a good rail system in America? Is because they just use resources like this for fucking bullfighting?
Yeah,
I
and crashing other trains into each other.
mean, that's very American, right?
Oh yeah, so 40,000 people came.
Damn, dude.
The impact caused both engine boilers to explode, which resulted in a shower of flying debris that killed two people.
That's not that bad, right? For a fucking mass accident.
This is an absolute dude's rock moment.
Yeah,
Hey, what if we crash those trains? So Missouri, Kansas, Texas Railroad, which is called as the Katy Line, MKT, Katy, I don't fucking know. It was there in the 1880s because there was a route between Dallas and Houston. As the railroad expanded, the old steam engines got replaced with newer, more powerful ones. And so they had to stockpile these older units. And this dude was like, yo, what if we fucking crash them?
what is he gonna do?
I'm saying. So they decided to do like an alternate route, like another track between Waco and a town called West in McLennan County. This had already been done before. They did a stage crash in Ohio in 1896, and it was a huge, like a big success. And it turned into be like one of the like biggest draws in Columbus, Ohio's history. And so they didn't make any money. So of course the dude in Texas was like, yo.
Capitalism.
Yeah. What if we like,
monetize
do this event? Yeah. Can we monetize this? And they fucking did. So they advertised and it actually like popped the fuck off. So like I said, it was free charge, but this place was super remote and they charged money to get a train ride to go to this event. They built, like I said, a separate little 4-mile segment, and each end of the track was situated atop of a hill. So it was like a bowl-shaped valley where the trains would meet.
This is The Simpsons.
Oh, dude, totally. So they do like a speed test the day before to predict the point of collision. Everyone was like, bro, this is totally safe. The boilers on the steam engines were designed to resist ruptures. So they're unlikely to explode. So each engine had 6 boxcars behind it. Now, Crush insisted on restricting the general public to a minimum of 200 yards away from the track, but he allowed the press to be within 100 yards, which is pretty sick. The officials out there expected a crowd of between 20,000 and 25,000, but like I said, 40,000 people showed up to this.
I mean, like, you're in bumfuck Needle, Texas, right? Like, hey, dude, they're crashing trains in 2 weeks. Let's go. Bring everybody.
Real shit, if they had this today, I would go. I thought about that as I was looking this over. I'm like, I would go. Fuck yeah, I would go. So the crash was delayed for an hour because the crowd resisted being pushed back to the safe distance by the police. They were like, no, we were getting close to this.
Power number. Okay, I will say, though, I hate to, like, derail you again. There's a pun there.
Good pun.
There's, like, this event in, like, Washington or Oregon where they drive cars off a cliff.
That rules.
So if you do want to experience that, there are events like this in America where you just watch vehicular destruction.
That's like, it seems like a more convoluted version of throwing your used car batteries into the ocean.
Yeah.
Which I, of course, support because it's totally safe and legal.
The fish are hungry.
Exactly. So, all right. So at 5 p.m., the two trains are pulling cars. They met in the middle of the track to be photographed, and then they're like rolled to their starting points. They let that shit go and jumped off the trains. Each train reached a speed of about 45 miles per hour by the time they met at the spot. There was a large explosion. Debris is blown hundreds of feet in the air. Panic breaks out in this crowd of 40,000 people. Debris is coming down among the spectators. Like I said, it killed 2, injuring at least 6 others. A photographer lost an eye to a flying bolt.
That's pretty good luck, dude. Like, I know it's really bad luck, but like the fact that you get hit with like a bullet in your eye and you're like, hey, I just lose my vision.
Yeah. Not bad. Yep. I know. That's like Final Destination. And then he like gets hit by a car on the drive home or whatever.
Dies of cholera 6 years later.
Right. There was a composer named Scott Joplin who wrote the Great Crush Collision March. The story made national headlines and the dude was fired for this stunt. But a lot of people were just like, yo, that was cool. It's no big deal that those people died. So they hired him back not too long after that, and he worked there for the rest of his career.
I mean, like, when you break it down, how many, like, air flight exhibits do you see, right? Where I'm like, there's probably one plane every, like, 4 events that crashes. Like, how is this any different?
Right. They settled several lawsuits to the victims' families with cash and lifetime train passes. Sick.
That's not traumatic.
Right? Injured photographer got $10,000 in 1896 money, which is about $350,000 today. Though the incident had a result of tragedy, the Katy company benefited enormously. So yeah, they it was notable because like this dude that wrote this famous musical piece, you could like it was debuted and dedicated for this railway. And it's notable because it includes instructions in the score for how to replicate the sounds of the train's collision through like how you play the notes.
I'm going to say something controversial here.
All right.
That's weaponized autism. Two faults, bro. Likes trains and he knows how to replicate the sounds through sonic means without actually being there.
Oh man, that's excellent. That's so good. We're sponsored by Dude Wipes, by the way. All right, so in 1976, the Texas Historical Commission erected a historical number a few miles from the site in West Texas. That is the Crash of Crush and Crush, Texas.
That was a good one. We got to go there. We can record.
It, yeah, dude, we should just go there and like make the train sounds. I'll bring a fucking steel pan or whatever the fuck.
You know, there's some like 800-year-old guy who just shows up and is like, that's not how you do this. I'm like, all right, man.
Do you think that if you like went there with a metal detector that you'd find some old ass shit? You got to, right?
I think so. And like you said, it took place at Waco. So I'm sure like part of that like leaked into the water tablet. And that's why David Koresh is so fucking weird.
Yeah, you might get like some bullet fucking missed shots over there.
We should do that one week, is like find the rabbit hole that leads from the Crush It Crash to Waco and how like the dots connect, because it's got to be like four layers, right? Four layers of A to B.
Oh man, that's, yeah. That's a great way to end our fantasy football podcast.
I think so, because there's something else to talk about right now.
Draft is in 3 weeks.
Oh my god, please hurry up.
What are the Chargers doing at 5?
Dude, it's alt or we're trading back. Like, I don't know. I'm already just so jaded. It's only been 4 years since I've been watching this sport, and I'm just like, I'm gonna be upset, right? Like last year I was so mad because we couldn't even pay like a fourth rounder to move up one spot to take Jackson Smith and Jigba. Like, if we knew we were getting rid of Keenan Allen, fuck Tom Telesco, bro.
What if they get Malik Nabers?
That's cool, man. Like, but also, like, the pessimist in me is just like, are we going to do it? Like, are we actually going to utilize him how he's supposed to be used? Like, I know, like, the Harbaugh system's like, LOL, they run. But, like, you do have to pass in the NFL. Like, that's not right. How – Harbaugh's not that stupid, right? But they're going to have to open up the offense a little bit more. I mean, obviously – he's like the best prospect that Herbert's ever been able to play with, right? Like, no slander to Keenan Allen, but like, the future is now, old man.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, man. I'm perplexed. I'm also curious of like what Buffalo's gonna do, right? Because the quote unquote.
Oh yeah, did something happen with the Bills?
Yeah, quote unquote locker room cancer. Who's a 31-year-old wide receiver who had like $800 million owed to him, was traded, and everybody lost their fucking mind over it. And I'm like, I think it's fine. I think both parties benefit. Whatever. I don't care. I'm not going to overdraft Stephon Diggs or CJ Stroud this year. So,
yeah, I think they're going to make a play. They're going to get a couple different wide receivers. This is a great class to throw a couple darts at the wall. I think Curtis Samuel is a better wide receiver than people think he is.
Yes.
I think Khalil Shakir is fine.
Do you think they're just going KC? Like, they've just been like Stockholm so bad where they're just like, oh, this is how KC beats us, with no wide receivers and just tight end and good defense, and they're just going to take the mold.
Problem is, Buffalo doesn't have a good defense.
I've been saying that. Everyone's like, it's pretty good. I'm like, no, they let half the defense go.
Yeah, and... when they don't let half the defense go, two-thirds of them are fucking hurt.
Yeah.
That's been Buffalo's problem the last couple of years, man. It's defensive and offensive line injuries. Like, that's just what happened.
That's just game. I'm also, I don't know, dude, don't pay Von Miller like $50 million to play two games for 3 years. Like, that's just bad process. You're just chasing the dragon and catching a falling knife.
I get the idea, but they made a bad move.
I just like, yo, like, this is the one time fantasy managers are correct. Don't take anybody who's over the age of 29, right? Like,
yeah,
I get they're proven, but like, also don't take the guy who has the triangle shaved in the back of his head. I don't know what that's about, but like, that's probably a character concern. Like, I don't care about Rashi Rice smoking weed and crashing a car, but like, that triangle shit, kind of weird.
Yeah, I'm firmly against it.
Who wins the division?
Miami.
9-8, dude, across the board.
I could see that, man.
It comes down to one tiebreaker.
And I'm sorry, AK Magic, shout out. Because when the Dolphins win the division, that means Tua is getting extended.
He's come down to reality of expectations, right? Where he's like, he ain't worth it, but he's our guy.
Yeah, ideally for the Dolphins, you give him a Daniel Jones type contract,
but which I think is fine, right? Like, he's not nowhere near as bad as Daniel Jones, and like, I think he's worth market value. He does enough. He's not a game breaker, but like, he does enough to put your team in a position. And Mike McDaniel's fine. I think Sean McDermott gets fired before him. I think Nick Sirianni gets fired before him.
Oh, dude, I'm so excited to figure out who the first coach is that's going to be fired this year. I'm so excited. So we'll see.
It's, what's his face? Shit. Who's Fat Mike in Texas? What's his last name? Mike
McCarthy? Yeah. Dude, I'm all for it. Fuck that guy.
We'll do a team breakdown. We got that coming. We got our 420 special coming up. We got a lot of stuff cooking.
Yeah, we're going to fucking blast on that one.
I think next week is kind of like the filler episode. Not that the content's filler, but like 420 episodes is a good one.
Yeah, it's a premium one. We got to do our yearly like really stoned takes.
Yep.
That's always a fan favorite, and we appreciate you. So thanks everyone for sticking around. Ryan.
Thank you, Dude Wipes.
Dude Wipes, you're killing it. Put it in your ass, Dude Wipes. If you want, I don't know. You don't have to.
Hey, what Ryan, God put that button there for a reason, dude.
I'm saying, dude, shout out to the prostate. All right. Yeah, episode 127. Over and out. You guys have a good night. We'll see you next week for some fun.
And Brock Bowers. Peace.
Goodbye.
Lover of Derek Carr.